welcome to the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs. You are here. Hello, my friends. How are you guys today? This is Nicole, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. Happy to be here with you today. So today is just going to be you and me. Just a personal reflection of life and life's lessons. And I was chatting last night with Lisa, and she and I were discussing the current climate of my life. And I was reflecting on the last few months and where I've arrived and the concept of stress levels and the baggage of stress and anxiety that we carry with us in life. And I was just kind of taking stock with her, and she said, Nicole, tomorrow morning when you wake up, jump on the microphone and tell the people. Tell the people what we're talking about, because if there's one thing you hear me say a lot, it is that chronic pain is but an entry point. It is an invitation to look at the things, the truths, the pain, the trauma, and the joys, and all the things that have brought us to this moment. And it's an invitation, and it's, trust me, it's a worthy invitation, because when we are suffering in chronic pain, there's nothing else. There's nothing else we can think about. Without your health, you have nothing. The cliche is deserved. But once you work on that, once you eliminate the pain signals that have been firing and misunderstanding your need to for survival, you arrive at this place where your whole life is available to you, and you get to ask yourself the question, how do I want to live? Now, this wasn't a question that was available to me when I was suffering. How do I want to live is an expansive question full of possibilities that I didn't even have access to when I was in chronic anything, because I was too busy figuring out how to manage my life and how to be okay. And what I find now in my life is that although I have not for years suffered with anything chronic that you could call chronic pain or disease or conditions, I'm still me, and I can still be anxious and overthinky and pre-grievy and catastrophizy. I'm making up new words, so just you can go ahead and call the Webster's Dictionary. And I can still be all these things. And do they serve me? You know, I am afforded the privilege of looking at that question because I have done the work. I've done the work for years. I've taught the work for years, of course. And of course, as I always say, if you are unfamiliar with the work and all the things I teach, there are so many places that I have explained them. Go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Click on the resources tab. Learn. Listen to this podcast. Start at episode one and learn, and give yourself this gift. So anyway, I get to ask myself, how do I want to live my life? And one thing I've noticed in the past few months, which is new, and the reason I'm here today to talk to you is because it's new, and I'm 51 years old, and the fact that I'm still learning new things is fucking exciting, because I don't want to always be who and what I have been. I don't want to say I'm just a person who can't handle conflict, or I'm just a person who shuts down when somebody is angry because of my rageaholic dad and, you know, my codependency. Like, those are fair things. And when I'm in those spaces of trigger, I give myself full flexibility to be there, but I don't want to have to be there. And so I'm always open to the question of what could be different. How could I be more awake? And in the past few months, I have noticed that I'm surprised. I'm surprised by my ability to handle things differently. And whenever I get surprised, I want to tell you, because I know that in the paradigm of the answer, allow, name, stay, and release, when we allow in our experiences, we name them in our journal speak practices, We stay when we are desperate to run and, you know, use our avoidance slash addictive behaviors of drinking and drugs and eating and running and overworking and overcaring for others. When we don't run, when we stay, the natural consequence is release. And everybody wants release. Everybody wants to ask me questions like, Nicole, how do I release this? And I always say, honey, you're doing it. Allow, name, and stay. Do the work. Do the work as I teach it. Release is a natural consequence of that. And what I have noticed in the past few months of my life is I am living in release. So let me explain. Let me make it more granular for you. So here is a picture of my life. I am, like I said, I'm 51. I am moving across the entire country. I live in a town where I can touch the Atlantic Ocean, and I am moving to a town where I can touch the Pacific Ocean. And in the midst of that, my middle guy, my 18-year-old son, had to apply and wait in the grueling process of figuring out where he was going to go to college. And because the choices were so different, there were some, you know, in the middle of the country and some on the East Coast and some in the North and some in the South and some on the West Coast, that we couldn't plan anything. I didn't know if he was going to need a car. I didn't know the climate in which he was going to live. And his mental health was suffering during this waiting period. So I've got that going on. I have to sell this house that I live in now. I have to find a place to live in California and then do all the things that are necessary to move, which is a lot, and all the things that are necessary to adjust my youngest child, who is going into 10th grade, to whatever new life is there, her extracurriculars, her school. Okay. And that's like just my personal life. I'm also in the midst of so much exciting stuff with this work, you know, a new book that is now on the horizon and building this brand out in my training that I'm writing with Christina Sarno and Lisa is producing and all of the exciting stuff that I can't even talk about yet that is happening. So I've got my entire work life and all the moving parts and all the people that I need to manage. So just picture that. Now picture that for a super type A, controlling, because I don't mean to be, but sometimes my fear leads me to control. Person who tends toward anxiety. I was about to call myself an anxious person, but I'm not an anxious person. I'm a person who runs anxious. I tend toward anxiety. So that kind of person. And if you look at that situation, and if you look at it through the lens of how much I care, because it's overwhelming how much I care, about everyone's feelings, how much I care about making sure everybody's okay. You know, my mother still lives here where I live and I need to move. So making sure she and I have all the conversations we need to have to see, to feel that she's as comfortable as she can be with what I need to do, which she and I are, we're good. To make sure my kids are okay because, you know, some people have this attitude toward kids where like, oh, well, you know, kids have to just come along. And I do know that to some extent that's true, but I also have a hypersensitivity to that because I was sort of dragged along with all of my parents' decisions. And so I just want to make sure, even though there are truths in life that need to be lived out, things that we need to do that must be done, that everyone's feelings are considered. You know, these things are so important to me. And so all of that put together, and if you would have looked at my life, and if I would have looked at my life, let's say a couple of years ago or even last year, I might have said, Jesus Christ, that amount of things all together, it's going to take me down. I'm going to be down to the ground. I'm going to be down on – I interviewed someone recently, and I said, well, did it take you down to your knees? And she said, it took me down to my face. And I would have said I'd be down to my face. I'd be on the ground with all of those things and the pressure. And like there's so much minutia within it. Like even just showing your house for sale when people are living in it, when you're living with two teenagers in your house. Do you guys even understand the rigor of every day of making it look perfect and making sure everyone's out of the house? And oh my God. So anyway. I think you get the picture. But the only reason I'm building it up and I'm telling you all these things is because I didn't do what I normally do. I didn't freak out. I didn't launch into a horrible TMS insomnia attack where every night my eyes pop open at 3 a.m. and I'm ruminating and spinning out for hours trying to figure out what I'm going to do or how I'm going to handle things or having conversations in my head that I need to have in the future or that I should have had in the past. I mean, this is definitely the way I have lived. I did not do that. And so like when I was talking to Lisa last night, I was trying to figure out why I didn't do that specifically because, you know, telling you the story, it's sort of cathartic for me, but the real reason I'm here is because I want to help you. I want to help you if this particular thing would get you, how you can apply it to your own life and have it not ruin and steal your moments, you know, if you can handle things. And so one thing I will say is I'm really putting in a plug for the next right considered action. And this is reminding me actually that I do have an anxiety course. It's called Freedom from an Anxious Life that I really outline this in. So, I mean, if anything here is piquing your interest, I'm always scanning the possibilities of how I can give you an opportunity to learn more. Go to my website under courses. Freedom from an Anxious Life does a lot of exercises around this stuff. But anyway, the next right considered action means you don't need to solve all your problems today, and you don't need to figure everything out that isn't possible today. So, like, for example, if you are moving and if all of those things are happening and if you know you need to show your house, but the only thing you can possibly do today is clean out a closet, and you could be easily paralyzed and be like, oh God, how can I clean out that closet? There's so much to do. I can't even figure it out. I can't even think about what this is going to be like. I can't even think about going in that closet. That is not a good posture. So what I did is I took all of that noise and that static that was kind of flying around because I have done this work and I did my journal speak every day when I needed to. And I woke up each morning and I said, what can I do today? Then in the long run will be one thing that is going to lead me toward peace. And I thought, well, there's that one closet. There's that closet in the entryway that if people were to come into this house and they opened it, it would not look good. So just clean out that closet today. And it's so easy to be like, yes, but that's only one closet of so many closets. Blah, blah, blah. And I said, no, I'm going to clean out that closet today. And on that day, whatever day that was, I took out the huge, you know, black garbage bags that look like trash bags for leaves. And I cleaned that closet out and I put it in the back of my car and I toted the stuff to Goodwill. And it was just one day. But then there was another day where I went through the kitchen. And then there was another day where I made sure that my kids had everything they needed to clean out their rooms. And I did lots of different runs to Goodwill. And little by slowly, by the time I came to show my house. Then the next right considered action was that day I sat my children down. And the first thing I did with my children, and I want you to know this because it's gone so well with my teenagers, is I really began the conversation with real connection to the things they might be feeling. Because it's so easy when we get caught up in stress to forget to do that part and to just sit them down and be like, hey guys, this is what needs to happen. Like, you guys have to have your rooms clean before you go to school. You have to make your beds. It has to look really good. I can't handle everything. You know, that is definitely an impulse. But I sat them down on that first day when we were going to have the house open for strangers to be walking into their bedrooms. And I said, you guys, the first thing I want to say is I'm sorry. I'm sorry because this is going to be annoying. And I'm sorry because I really know how inconvenience, and each of you have your own lives and you're trying to finish the school year. And, you know, Oliver, you're getting ready for graduation. Charlotte, you needed to like figure out all this stuff finishing ninth grade. And I really appreciate you. I appreciate you. I thank you. And I'm sorry because this is going to be super annoying. And I really appreciate the fact that you guys are willing to be team players in this. And here's how it's going to be. We're going to have to do the rooms. We're going to have to be ready, you know. And I will tell you, these kids, they did not complain once. And I'm not saying they're perfect children. Trust me, they're not. But they were so lovely. And I know why. Because I never lorded over them. I never acted like I was dictatorial and just telling them what to do. We were in it together. Every time they said, oh, this is so annoying, I said, I know. It so is. It's annoying for me too, but we're doing it, guys. Thank you. Like, I just, that little step is really important. So I did that on that day. And you know, this is just one factor in all these things I told you, but I'm trying to break it down for you because the net of it was when I was talking to Lisa yesterday, it was a celebratory call because I sold my house. I sold my house. The last time I was on my trip to California in May, I got a place there. I'm looking into the movers. I'm doing everything that needs to be done. Oliver's headed off to NYU in the fall. He's feeling okay. You know, he's starting to adjust to that. He's doing well. But all of these things took many, many little moments in each that had I not just slowed down, done my journal speak when I needed to in order to get rid of the kicky baby inside of me that was like, I don't want to do it. I can't do it. I won't do it. I'm stuck. I'm paralyzed. I'm sad. I'm grieving. I'm excited. I'm nervous. I'm anxious. Whatever. I got that out on the page, dumped it out. My reservoir was down. I wasn't getting TMS. And little by slowly, I was doing the next right considered action. I was, and here's the thing with those conversations, those difficult conversations that we have to pause and have with people that we need on our side. They're only possible if you're journal speaking or if your reservoir is down, because otherwise you're too triggered and you just need to be like stressed out and, oh, everybody just do what I say. But that does not help you in the long run. That actually causes more stress in the long run. And where I arrived yesterday is, I found myself quoting Ram Dass, who is one of my favorite spiritual teachers, some work he teaches from Emmanuel. And what he said is, and I'm paraphrasing, but anxiety and stress and worry are like heavy baggage that you bring onto the train. And when you arrive at your destination, you always will arrive at the same place. But after carrying so much heavy baggage, such a rigorous journey, and let's pretend it's four trains you need to take to get there, and a bus and a car, and dragging the baggage from each thing, the baggage containing your worry, your stress, your anxiety, your pre-grieving, your fear, your impulsive moves that come from not doing your journal speak where you yell at people or you make them feel like they're not part of the team. And so then they yell back at you, like all the things that happen in life when we're stressed out. Instead of carrying all that baggage, I actually didn't this time. And that is a revelation for me. And because I didn't carry those bags of my stress and my worry and my anxiety, picture that journey. Light and easy, tiny little backpack on my back. I jumped from the train to the bus to the car to the train. Nothing with me. Free and easy. And you know what happens when you're free and easy and you're not carrying 10 suitcases? You look out the window and see the sun. You strike up a conversation with the person sitting next to you, and maybe you make some personal connections, some warmth, some joy. You breathe the air, you notice things, maybe you learn something. Like, it's unreal, the difference. And the truth is, I have arrived at the same place and probably at a better place because I just chilled out. And there were different difficult things I had to do along the way. I had to deal with difficult personal conversations with things when they weren't working out, and I had to have boundaries, and I had to make choices, and I had to have some conflict. These are not my fave. But I did them, and I did them with ease because I was doing the work and the things I'm discussing with you. And when I arrived, and I'm continually arriving, and there's no such thing as actually arriving, but as I arrive at each little stopping point, I find that I didn't need to carry all those bags because all that stuff just happens regardless. And like, okay, so let me talk a little bit about the personal relationships because so we just talked about the move, but let's talk about managing someone else's suffering, because that's another part of this that I think is worthy of discussion. So my son, you know, had to live through the college application and acceptance process. And any parent who has ever done this, it's freaking hell. It's hell because first of all, there's the rigor of the application itself, which is just so hard. And, you know, I didn't have any help because we don't have a lot of college counseling where I live. So it was really me as the the helper and the counselor. And so I didn't have any help. I'm helping him. He did a ton on his own. He was so great, but it doesn't really matter. It's hard. Even if you have a college counselor, even if you're paying someone silly money to help you, it's still hard. And then the rejections, and then the waitlisting, and the just the waiting, and the mental anguish of the waiting, and the way the kid needs to reflect on his own worth, and what does it even mean that he kicked his ass for 4 years if he gets rejected from this place or that. Anyone who has even slightly touched this process knows how grueling it is. And then we arrive at the acceptance, which is, of course, gloryful, but it comes hand in hand with then his nervous system having been so dysregulated from all this waiting that he kind of spun out. And so we have all this stuff happening. And now I am a parent with all my stress, caring a lot about his suffering. And so here is my little helpful note, hopefully, on how to handle someone else's suffering that you really care about. I think we need to become more comfortable with the uncomfortable and more comfortable with the fact that not everything has a solution, and certainly not everything has a quick solution, because that's the way to wear this particular thing loosely. You know, maybe the next right considered action in the journal speak, all of that is helpful, but when it really comes down to someone's feelings and worrying about someone else, the best thing you can do for yourself is accept that I might not feel better today. So if he was having a really hard day, and let's say this was during the waiting where I didn't know if he was going to get in anywhere he wanted to go, and he could barely bring himself to get out of bed except for his basic responsibilities, and I had to say, that's okay. That's okay today. If that's as good as it gets today, as long as nobody is in imminent danger and, you know, there's nothing I can do about it other than being a support and a loving parent, then I'm not going to feel better about this today, and that's okay. That's okay. That's my day. I'm not going to feel better about this today. And there had to be a lot of days that I said that to myself. And here's the thing. Similar to selling my house yesterday and having that be a celebration, today, at least today, my child is in a great place, getting excited for school, doing a lot of different things that, you know, make him feel accomplished, not lying in bed, but that's today. So let's just call that an arrival for the sake of this conversation. Same thing. I could have carried 10 suitcases of heavy baggage through that journey with him since last summer when we started these applications, and I decided not to. I decided my worry and my stress and my anxiety would be heavy, and I didn't want them on my back. So on the days that I felt really worried, I said, okay, well, today's a day of worry. Hand to heart, double hand to heart. Today's a day of worry. I guess I'm going to hang out with worry today. It sits in the back seat. As Elizabeth Gilbert says, it doesn't pick the snacks. It doesn't drive the car. It doesn't map the route. It sits. I don't reject it. I don't push it away, because what we resist persists. But I let it in, and I didn't let it own me. And I said, this is a day I'm going to worry. It feels worryful today. And then I just went about my day and did my next right considered action, and or I didn't. Like, that's another thing. There are days where I should meditate that I don't meditate. There are days that I should journal speak that I don't journal speak. There are days where I just feel shitty all day. They aren't often, but there are days. And on those days, it is equally, if not more important to say, this is the day of feeling shitty all day because I'm not willing to do anything to make myself feel better. Like, it's acceptance. And guys, it is a powerful tool. It is a powerful place to arrive and to live. So here I am. And like, tomorrow could be hard. It's really just about knowing that when we hone a toolkit that contains thoughtful, mindful tools that we've spent years cultivating, and we actually use the toolkit, life can be different. I am different. I operate differently, even when it's hard, and you can too. So if you're someone who is suffering in chronic pain and conditions, obviously this is all like fluff talk because you're busy like being able to walk from the bed to the bathroom because your back hurts so much. I have been you. I get it. Do the work, honey. You got this. You can do this. You can do this. I used to be you, and I am about to go for a 5-mile run. So I'm just telling you, like, this is available to you. It is a personal check-in. As you find me today, I'm recording this prior, obviously, but as you find this today, if you're listening on the day it drops, I am finishing up my Omega retreat. This will drop on June 30th, and I'm finishing up my Omega retreat, and no matter what, I know it's going to be amazing, so I'll say that, because it always, always is, every year, bigger and better and more incredible than the next. So I hope that I spent the week with you, if you're listening. And if not, you catch me next year. I think next year our dates are in July. But anyway, I send you big love. I hope this helped you today. It was really great to talk about it. And it's always really soothing to know that my lessons can in some small way help you. So if you're enjoying this podcast, hop over to iTunes and rate and review it. It really helps other people find the podcast. It brings me a ton of joy. And until next week, this has been Nicole Sachs with the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast. I will see you then. Bye-bye.